eyes are saying, wanna sail with the light of day, sailing through my garden, sailing through the trees, sailing through my garden.
Welcome to Story Garden. My name is Lucia, your host. This is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, a listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Story Garden comes to you every first and third Thursday. Story Garden features local kids reading stories they love. Thank you for tuning in. Tonight, I'm going to be reading Verdi by Janelle Cannon. It's a very good book. On a small tropical island, the sun rose high above the steamy jungle. A mother python was sending her hatchlings out into the forest the way all mother pythons do. Grow up big and green as the trees' leaves, she called her little young babies as they happily scattered among the trees. But Verdi dawdled. He was proudly eyeing his bright yellow skin. He especially liked the bold stripes that zigzagged down his back. Why the hurry to grow up big and green, he wondered. Maybe some of the older snakes in the jungle could tell him. Verdi ventured into the treetops to look for them. Umbles, Aggie, and Ribbon were lazing on some branches nearby. Verdi looked at their droopy green bodies. "It's not polite to stare," chided Aggie. Umbles burped and groaned. "It's taken nearly 4 weeks for that last lizard to digest. I surely do like lizards, but the lizards don't like me." "Why don't lizards like you?" asked Verdi. "Don't interrupt," Umbles grumbled. "Dear me," whined Aggie. "If I don't shed soon, this itchy skin will drive me bananas." Verdi tapped a tune with his tail as he waited to speak. "Stop that, Verdi. It's making me nervous," Ribbon complained. "Besides, you'll never grow up to be properly green, always interrupting and constantly fidgeting." Verdi couldn't imagine being in a hurry to be like them, and he really wanted to keep his sporty stripes. Hoping to find snakes that weren't so boring, Verdi slipped away. Dozer was snoring on a tree not far from the others. "Hello," said Verdi. "Do you want to climb trees with me?" "I'm tired," Dozy said. Go do a few laps around the jungle, okay?" Verdi's heart sank. Greens were not only lazy and boring, they were rude. At the very top of a tall tree, Verdi gripped one branch with his tail and another with his little snake jaws. "I will never be lazy, boring, or green," he thought. "I will jump and climb and keep moving so fast that I will stay yellow and striped forever." Then Verdi let go. From a distance, the greens watched. "Oh my," they chorused. Ribbon shook his head. "At this rate, he'll be lucky to make it to his first molt." Aggie nodded. "He'll likely to put an eye out on a branch." Umbles moaned. "He may not live to turn green." But one day, Verdi's skin began to peel, revealing a pale green stripe etching across his whole body. "Cack!" he gasped. "How can this be? I'm the speediest snake in the jungle, and I'm still turning green." He raced down to the river, grabbed a mouthful of leaves. Verdi flung himself into the water. "If I can't run this green off, I'll scrub it off," he thought. His frantic splashing caught the eye of a large bottom feeder cruising the murky depths. "Yum," the old fish hummed. "Lunch." But before the fish could haul Verdi under, the frightened snake bit him on the nose. "Achoo!" With a blast of his rubbery lips, the great fish sneezed, sending Verdi into the air. Slapping onto the soggy shore, Verdi skated out of reach. "Phew, that was close," he sputtered. Every inch of his body was covered with wet, gloppy mud. "Kind of lumpy, kind of brown. It sure beats being green." He left the mud on. But the soft brown muck dried to a hard gray shell, and Verdi could barely move. If he even budged, the stuff cracked off in jagged chunks. As each piece fell away, Verdi could see that his whole body was even greener than before. "This is terrible," cried Verdi. He pictured himself hanging around in droopy loops, itching and complaining and worrying all day like all the old greens. He looked up in the sky where a sun blazed a beautiful yellow, just the color he used to be. Then he pulled a vine to the top of the tree. Launching himself from the tree top, Verdi startled a flock of colorful birds. He became dizzy with delight, sure the bright sun and his lofty speed would turn him golden again. In his joy, Verdi forgot he would fall back down to earth. Whoopee-wappy-flip-flop-wham! Plumbing into the trees, Verdi landed in a crooked sprawl across a log on the forest floor. He couldn't move. "Help!" he croaked. As usual, the greens had been watching Verdi's antics. They moved quickly to where he lay. "Didn't we say it would come to this?" Umbel said, shaking his head. Aggie sighed. "Lucky he still has two good eyes." They gently lifted Verdi up to a safer place where they could watch him over while he healed. Neatly splinted to a branch, Verdi had no choice but to listen to the greens as they gabbled. "Remember how I used to streak across the forest floor?" Ribbon said. "Quick as lightning," answered Aggie. "And I climbed giant trees like they were nothing. They grew taller than, you know." "The things I dared to run down and swallow," Umbles bragged. "Wild boar were no match for me." Verdi was astonished. "You used to run, climb, and hunt giant pigs? What happened?" "Verdi crashed, just like you," Aggie replied. I took a terrible fumble and almost put an eye out. Then old Umbles here nearly choked to death. Now we prefer the peaceful life. A warm perch, a little sunshine, and an occasional good meal. The greens rambled on about those days of glory, and Verdi settled in on his branch. Finally, one afternoon, Umbles said, "Looks like you're ready to go again." He carefully untied Verdi from the branch. "You're welcome to come with us," said Aggie. Ribbon agreed. The three greens slipped quietly back into the forest. Verdi wasn't ready to join them. He wasn't sure what he wanted to go, so he just stretched and stayed put until the sun went down, and he listened to the forest come alive. Time passed. The moon and sun took turns in the sky. Verdi marveled as the full moon grew thinner every night. Then he watched patiently as it grew round again. He wondered why he hadn't noticed that before. Verdi became so green that he blended perfectly with the leaves. He was so still that the other creatures walked right by without noticing him. One fine morning, as Verdi basked in the sunshine, two small snakes appeared. They tapped and fidgeted as they stared. "Get a load of that big green guy," one of them whispered. "Do you think he ever moves?" The other one snickered. "I seriously doubt it." "They're just like I used to be," thought Verdi, "and now I'm what I was afraid to be." He looked at his big green body and slowly smiled. "How would you like to climb trees with me?" he asked. "With you?" The yellows were astonished. "I'll even teach you my fancy figure eight," Verdi replied, though he was a little worried about putting an eye out. With practice, the three snakes performed a perfect triple figure eight. Leaping and looping with his little striped friends, Verdi laughed. "I may be big and green, but I'm still me." Welcome back to Story Garden on KZFR. I just read Verdi, and the song you just listened to was played entirely on toy instruments. They're Beatles songs, but they're played on instruments. And the next one I'm going to read is The Library, which is one of my favorite books because I love books. And this is entirely about a girl who loves books, and it's by Sarah Stewart. Elizabeth Brown entered the world, dropping straight down from the sky. Elizabeth Brown entered the world, skinny, nearsighted, and shy. She didn't like to play with dolls. She didn't like to skate. She learned to read quite early at an incredible rate. She always took a book to bed with a flashlight under the sheet. She'd make a tent of covers and read herself to sleep. Elizabeth Brown went off to school, dragging a steamer trunk. Elizabeth Brown unpacked her books, breaking the upper bunk. She sat in all her classes and doodled on a pad, adrift in dreams of entering at a Raiders Olympipad. She manufactured library cards and checked out books to her friends, then shocked them with her midnight raids to collect the books again. Elizabeth Brown preferred a book to going on a date. While friends went out and danced till dawn, she stayed up reading late. She took a train one afternoon and promptly lost her way, so bought a house and settled down for tutoring for prey. Elizabeth Brown walked into town summer, fall, winter, spring. Elizabeth Brown walked into town looking for only one thing. She didn't want potato chips. She didn't want new clothes. She went straight to the bookstore. May I have one of those? Elizabeth Brown walked right back home and read and read and read. She even read while exercising and standing on her head. She made a list of groceries and tucked it in her book, then lost the list among the fruits and left with nothing to cook. She read about Greek goddesses while vacuuming the floor, attending only to her book, she'd walk into the door. Books were piled on top of chairs and spread across the floor. Her shelves began to break apart, and still she read more and more. Big books made very solid stacks on which teacups could be rest. Small books became building blocks for busy little guests. When volumes climbed the parlor walls and blocked the big front door, she had to face the awful fact she could not have one more. Elizabeth Brown walked into town that very afternoon. Elizabeth Brown walked into town whistling a happy tune. She didn't want a bicycle. She didn't want silk bows. She went straight to the courthouse. May I have one of those? The form was for donations. She quickly wrote this line. I, E. Brown, give this town all that was ever mine. Elizabeth Brown moved in with a friend and lived to a ripe old age. They walked to the library day after day and turned page after page after page.
ocean with plasticine ported with looking glass ties. Suddenly someone is there at the turnstile. The girl with kaleidoscope eyes.
Welcome back to Story Garden on KZFR. I just read The Library. Now I'm going to read Chester's Way, which is a really good book by Kevin Hankes. Chester had his own way of doing things. He always cut his sandwiches diagonally, he always got out of bed on the same side, and he never left the house without double knotting his shoes. Chester always had the same thing for breakfast, toast with jam and peanut butter. And he always carried a miniature first aid kit in his back pocket, just in case. "You definitely have a mind of your own," said Chester's mother. "That's one way to put it," said Chester's father. Chester's best friend was Wilson, and he was exactly the same way. That's why they were best friends. Chester wouldn't play baseball unless Wilson played, and they never swung at the first pitch or slid head first. Wilson wouldn't ride his bike unless Chester wanted to, and they always used hand signals. If Chester was hungry, Wilson was too, but they rarely ate between meals. "Some days I just can't tell those two apart," said Wilson's mother. "Me neither," said Wilson's father. Chester and Wilson. Wilson and Chester. That's the way it was. They loved to go on picnics. Once, when Wilson accidentally swallowed a watermelon seed and cried because he was afraid that a watermelon plant would grow inside of him, Chester swallowed one, too. "Don't worry," said Chester. "If you grow a watermelon plant, I'll grow one, too." Chester duplicated his Christmas list every year and gave a copy to Wilson because they always wanted the same things anyway. For Halloween, they always dressed up as things that went together. Salt and pepper shakers, two mittens on a string, ham and eggs. "They really are two peas in a pod," said Chester's mother. "Looks like it," said Chester's father. In spring, Chester and Wilson shared the same umbrella. In winter, they never threw snowballs at each other. In fall, they raked leaves together. And in summer, they reminded each other to wear sunscreen so they wouldn't burn. Chester and Wilson. Wilson and Chester. That's the way it was. Until Lily moved into the neighborhood. Lily had her own way of doing things. She wore band-aids all over her arms and legs to look brave. She talked backwards to herself sometimes so no one could understand what she was saying. And she never left the house without one of her nifty disguises. Lily waved at all the cars that passed by, even if she didn't know who was in them. And she always carried a loaded squirt gun in her back pocket, just in case. "She definitely has a mind of her own," said Chester. "That's one way to put it," said Wilson. When Lily asked Chester and Wilson to play, they said they were busy. When she called them up on the phone, they disguised their voices and said they weren't home. If Lily was walking on one side of the street, Chester and Wilson crossed the other side and hid. "She's something else," said Chester. "Looks like it," said Wilson. One day, when Wilson and Chester were practicing their hand signals, some older boys rode by, popping wheelies. They circled Chester and Wilson and yelled personal remarks. Chester and Wilson didn't know what to do. Just when they were about to give up hope, a fierce-looking cow with horrible fangs jumped out of the bushes and frightened the older boys away. "Are you who I think you are?" said Chester to the cat. "Of course," the cat replied. "Thank you, Lily," said Chester. "You're welcome, Chester," said Lily. "Thank you, Lily," said Wilson. "You're welcome, Wilson," said Lily. "We're glad you were wearing a disguise," said Chester. I'm glad you had your squirt gun, said Wilson. I always do, said Lily, just in case. Afterward, Chester invited Lily over for lunch. You have the Muscle Mouse cup, said Lily. Of course, said Chester. I do too, said Lily. Same here, said Wilson. Chester and Wilson cut their sandwiches diagonally. Lily asked Chester's mother if they had cookie cutters, and she made stars and flowers and bells. That's neat, said Chester. Wow, said Wilson. That night, Lily invited Chester and Wilson to sleep over. You have a nightlight, said Chester. Of course, said Lily. I do too, said Chester. Same here, said Wilson. Chester and Wilson wanted to toast with jam and peanut butter for breakfast the next day. Boring, said Lily. Try this instead. This is good, said Chester. Wow, said Wilson. After that, when Lily asked Chester and Wilson to play, they said yes. When she called them up on the phone, they had pleasant conversations. And if Lily was walking on one side of the street, Chester and Wilson waved and ran to catch up. Chester and Wilson taught Lily hand signals, and she taught them how to pop wheelies. Lily taught Chester and Wilson how to talk backwards, and they taught her how to double knot her shoes. Some days I just can't tell those three apart, said Lily's mother. Me neither, said Lily's father. Chester and Wilson and Lily. Lily and Wilson and Chester. That's the way it was. For Halloween, they dressed up as the three blind mice. For Christmas, Lily gave Chester and Wilson nifty disguises, and they gave her a box of multicolored shoelaces, extra long for double knotting. They loved to go on picnics. When Chester and Wilson told Lily about how they had each swallowed a watermelon seed once, Lily swallowed three of them. I'll grow a watermelon plant for each of us, she said. In spring, Chester and Wilson and Lily shared the same umbrella. In winter, they never threw snowballs at each other. In fall, they raked leaves together. And in summer, they reminded each other to wear sunscreen so they wouldn't burn. Chester and Wilson and Lily. Lily and Wilson and Chester. That's the way it was. And then Victor moved into the neighborhood.